Page 5, yeah. I'd like you to focus your attention on one thing, and that is the issue of how the leadership in all of the incidents, all of the pieces that I'm going to extract for you in this famous piece of Tisha B'Av Gemara, Kamsa Bar Kamsa, how the leadership reacts to the situations that they are in. We'll see four incidents and try together to be able to arrive at some kind of pattern, if at all such a pattern can be discovered. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan taught, you've got to remember that this Rabbi Yochanan was the famous Rabbi Yochanan who edited Talmud Yerushalmi, who when he was a youngster still knew Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The titular leader of Eretz Yisrael Amoraim. Mai dichsiv, the pasuk says, Ashrei ish mefachei tamid, fortunate is a person who is constantly afraid, fearful. Umakshe libol yipol bara'ah, but the one who hardens his heart, who closes his eyes to what's going to go on, yipol bara'ah, will fall because of the evil he brings. That pasuk is best understood by what happened, Akamsa Balkamsa Chorov Yerushalayim, by if you saw what happened with these two people called Kamsa and the other one Bar Kamsa, which ultimately led to the destruction of Yerushalayim, meaning that there were people there who weren't Mefachei Tamid, who weren't afraid of the consequences, who closed their hearts and their eyes to the consequences of what went on over there. And Atarnagola Vatarnagolta Chorov Tur Malka. Tur Malka is an area, a region in Judea, somewhere in the area of Yerushalayim. Scholars are hard pressed to exactly identify it. Tur Malka means Har HaMelech, but it isn't one mountain, it is probably a mountain range that surrounds Judea. Because of Tarnagola, because of a rooster, Vatarnagolta, and a hen, Choruv Tur Malka were destroyed because of a rooster and a hen. At this point it seems absurd, but when we take a look at the Gemara we'll try to discover what it's all about. And finally, Ashoka de Rispik Choruv Betar, the famous Betar, which was the last stronghold of Rabbi Akiva and the Bar Kokhba revolution after the Churban. This Betar was destroyed because of Ashoka de Rispik. Ashoka de Rispik, you've got to understand, you've got to go to the movies and to television to understand this, that in ancient times, a prince or a princess was carried in a coach. And the coach could have been carried either by horses, which had wheels on it, or people themselves carried the staves, the sticks. And on these sticks, on these moats, on these bars, there was the carriage, there was the stagecoach, and that was covered. Ashoka de Rispo, because of one of the bars on which you carry a prince or a princess, is Nechreva Betar, or Choru Betar, ultimately led to some violent reaction to Betar. Now, if you were to stop there, you'd have to agree that Chazal are speaking in very ludicrous terms. But if you go on and try, as the Gemara does, to try to understand what went on here, the process that went on here, Rabbi Yochanan will then teach you what is going on. Please remember that you're going to have incredible difficulty in trying to pin down historically actually what happened. Because Rabbi Yochanan lives after the Churban, a century after the Churban. And Rabbi Yochanan functions 100 years in perspective, and they're not really interested in history. They are interested, once the Churban occurs, to try to derive and extract a religious, a theological lesson, a lesson what we would call today of Musar. What is there to learn from it? And you don't worry about historical facts. That archaeologists worry about. You worry about living realities. And those living realities sometimes have to be spoken of, not in bland, cold history, but in romantic symbolism. And that's what you're going to find here. Akamsa bar Kamsa Chorev Yerushalayim. Because of two men, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, ultimately Yerushalayim was destroyed. You want to know what happened with these two men? Dehahu Gavra. There was a certain man. He was a third party. He was not Kamsa and he was not Bar Kamsa. He's the third culprit. And somehow he gets off scot-clean. We don't know his name. Derachamei, he had a friend whose name was Kamsa. Ubaal Divavei. And the one who was on his lips all the time, Dovev Mesharim, the one he would rank out, the one he would curse out, the one he would speak Lashon Hara about constantly, that's Baal Divavei, in other words, his enemy. The enemy's name was Bar Kamsa. So you have three people here. You have that certain fellow, that Joe Smith, whose friend was number two, Bar Kamsa, and number three, the enemy, so to speak, was Bar Kamsa. You'll notice the language that Rabbi Yochanan uses, Baal Divavei, the one against whom he directed all of his lips, all of his talking. In other words, this is the hait of Lashon Hara, that he could not live and say anything decent about this Bar Kamsa. Ovad Se'udasa, line 5, the second word. That certain Joe Smith, Ovad Se'udasa, he made a Se'uda, he made a party. Omar le Lishamei, so Joe Smith tells his servant, Zil Ayasi li Kamsa, go invite for me my friend Kamsa to the dinner. Ozal, the servant, went. Ayasi le Baal Kamsa, and instead he went ahead and invited Baal Kamsa, having thought that he heard that. Also, Baal Kamsa came. And Ashkechei the Hava Yosef, and Joe Smith sees that he is sitting at his table. Baal Kamsa, the enemy, is sitting at his table. Omalei, so Joe Smith says, Michdei hahu gavra bal devova, since this fellow, he doesn't want to even call him by his name, right? It's like talking to a third party, since this fellow is my enemy. Dehahu gavra hu, my boy is hocho, this fellow, in other words, you, Bar Kamsa, what are you doing here? Where do you have the chutzpah to come into my house? Kum, get up, look, get out of here. Amarle says Bar Kamsa to Joe Smith, Hoil va'asoi, listen to me, since I am here, Shavkon, let me stay, leave me alone, V'yavina loch demei mada ochilna v'shasina, and I will pay you for whatever I eat and drink. Page 6. Amarle says Joe Smith, Lo mitan aleph, no which way, you're not staying. Omalei says Bar Kamsa to Joe Smith, Yahavina loch de mei palga de seuda seich, I'll pay for 50% of the entire seuda. Why embarrass me? Now this wasn't just a dinner where two people or two families were sitting. This was a public seuda. This was a simcha. Is Omalei lo? Bar Kamsa says, no way, I'm not taking your 50%. Get out of here. Omalei, he said to them, Yavina loch d'mei kula seuda seich. Bar Kamsa offers to pay for the entire seuda. Omalei, and Joe Smith answers, lo, no way. You feel it. Naktebi a day, Joe Smith picks him up with his hands, ve'okme, and stands him up, ve'afke, and he throws him out of the house. Bar Kamsa recuperates from this shock, the Omar. Ho'il v'havoyasvei rabbonon. Since sitting at the party, seeing what was going on, there were a whole bunch of rabbis. V'lo mochubei, and they didn't protest the actions of Joe Smith. Shema mino, what am I supposed to derive from this? What can I conclude? Konicha leho. It's obvious that the rabbis went along with this embarrassment. And Joe Smith bought them off, and he was going to do with me whatever he wants, and they are not going to say anything. Where are the rabbis? Where was a protest? Where was someone to try to intercede on my behalf that I should not have had to stand such incredible embarrassment, and publicly yet? This is still Bar Kamsa thinking and scheming in the pain, in the aftermath of what had happened. Bar Kamsa continues, and he says, Azil, I think I'm going to go. Echol Bahu Kulsa, and I'm going to overturn their plans by speaking Lashon Hara, Bei Malka, in the house of the king, in other words, Roman general. The Ozal, in fury, Bar Kamsa goes. The Omale Le Kesar, he speaks to the procurator, he speaks to the general in charge of the one, the Roman, who is in charge. And he tells the Roman general, Mardu Becha Yehudai, you have a revolution of the Jews on your hand. Whereupon the Roman general says to Bar Kamsa, Omale Mi Yema, who says that there's a revolution here? What are you coming to tell me? How do you know that there's a revolution? Omale Bar Kamsa says, I'm telling you they are plotting to revolt against you. And I'll tell you how you contest it. Shadar Lahu Kurbona, why don't you, Roman general, you, pagan, why don't you send them an animal for a korban in the Beis HaMikdash? Chozis, and you will see yourself, Imak Rivin Le, if they go ahead and they sacrifice it or not. Whereupon the general Ozal went ahead, Shadar Biyadei sent in his hands, in the hands of Bar Kamsa, Egla Tilsa. Egla Tilsa means, it's not Kolosa, it should be Tilsa, like Tosfos has, is a very healthy and a very beautiful animal. It was an Egel, it was a young calf. And remember that Bar Kamsa is bringing this to the Beis HaMikdash on behalf of the Roman. Bahadei Ka'osi, while he was bringing the animal, Shidobei Muma, he decided to inflict a wound in the animal where? Beniv Sfasov, in its upper lip. The Amrila, some said it was Bedokin Sheba'ayin, it was in the white of the eye or in the lid of the eye. But whether it was in the lip or the eye, it really didn't matter. The purpose of inflicting this wound was, go on, Duchta, in a place, Lididon Hava Muma, which when it comes to animals and korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, this puncture was considered a mum, was considered a defect to render an animal inacceptable for a korban. But lididaho, according to Roman law, where sacrifices also occurred, lav mumahu, it wasn't considered a mum. Well, he brings the animal and he shows them that it's got a puncture. Sova Rabbonin le Krovei. They had to paskin on the animal. So the leadership, Rabbonin, paskin, that maybe we ought to go ahead and sacrifice it. Why? Mishum Shalom Malchus. Because after all, if we're going to reject this Korban, realizing who the sender is, we're liable to create a revolution. In the deliberations as to what to do with this korban that had the puncture, Omar Lehu Rab Zechariah ben Avkulas. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas said to them, you are going to sacrifice this animal? Yomru ba'alei mumin craving legabe mizbeach? You are setting a precedent here that it's incredibly dangerous. You see the mum, you see the damage, you see the blemish, and you will allow people to think as a result of what you are doing that a Baal Mum can be brought for a korban on the Mizbeach, and people will forget that this is Shalom Malchus. You cannot chance it. It is too dangerous. The impression that you are going to leave is going to be an extraordinarily dangerous one, l'halacha. So they plan elsewhere. Savur, they decide to look to solve the problem. By what? By l'miktilei, by killing Bar Kamsa, d'lo lezel v'leimot. You can't kill the animal, let's kill the human being. So de lo lezel, so he shouldn't go back to the Romans, Velema, and tell them. Because it was quite obvious that everyone knew where this Bar Kamsa was coming from. In the deliberations of Plan B, Omar Laho, Rabbi Zechariah, the same Rabbi Zechariah said to them, what? You are going to kill him? Yomru matil mum bekodashim yehareg? You want to start a precedent here that says that anyone who goes ahead and actively, willfully puts a mum, puts a puncture into kodshim, into karbonos, is chayav misa? It's not in the halacha that way. Reflecting back on this, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Anvesanuso shall Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. Anvesanus comes from the word anova, which means humility. We'll soon see what it means. Rabbi Yochanan says, Anvesanuso shall Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. I'm going to translate it as the naivete of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas was such that Hechriva es Beisenu, that ultimately it led to the destruction of Abayis, the Sorfo es Echoleinu, and led to the burning down of the Kodesh Kodshim, Vihiglisonu Me'artzenu, and ultimately the Golus came from this. How did it come? Because ultimately Bar Kamsa went back to the Roman general and psyched him up to say, you see, they refused to accept your karma. Rabbi Yochanan's obiter dicta, his judgment over here, as far as what caused the destruction, has to be looked at. Anvesanu Sosha Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. And I asked you at the beginning to think of leadership here. You know, everyone knows what to do. Everyone knows how to solve a problem. Everyone knows exactly how to erase the ills of society. Until you sit in the seat of leadership. The theme that I would like you to dwell upon is the theme of vexation, of confusion, of not knowing what kind of a decision to make. This Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas is mentioned only twice in all of Shas that we know of. Twice, once here and once in Masechet Shabbos. But the personality of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas is a personality that is common amongst leadership, even the greatest of leaders, and that is a sense of indecisiveness because of the vexation, the problems of being torn one way or another. Now I'm sorry that some of my staunchest Hasidim are not here, where I could simply say to them, you want to sit in this chair in back of me, I'll give it to you for $10, I'll pay you. And let's see some of you guys make the decisions that you criticize and that you hold against me, and see where they go. Years ago, I once said that probably the one thing that I despise, you hear that word about my occupation, is to have to paskin a halacha. According to the Constitution and according to all convention here at Young Israel, if two sides in the organization have a shiloh, and one says yes and the other says no, one says stand and the other one says sit, I am the rabbi because of the fact that I sit in this chair. I've been sitting so long that the velvet already is worn off. I have to decide. Do you know that is the thing that I decide, that I despise most? Because any which way that I decide, if already the camps have formed, if already the sides have coagulated, I have to be wrong any which way. 50% is going to be dissatisfied. I'd like to see you do differently when you sit here. Now, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas was not the only one. He was typical of the leadership, because do you remember what set off Bar Kamsa? What set off Bar Kamsa? That they didn't do anything. Okay? Now, I am happy that this is official record. Okay? Now, you know that there are some people who will go ahead and make a yontif out of this statement. The rabbis don't do anything. But I want you to hear the vexation of leadership, the confusion of leadership, not because necessarily, or not because always, the leaders don't know what to do. The leaders may know what to do, but the situations are such that it completely freezes them in their leadership. I'll refer to it again. But do you know one of the biggest tragedies of leadership that exists in the entire history, the modern history of Klal Yisrael? There's a man by the name of Menachem Begin, who for all the years was the loyal opposition. He knew how to do it. And for all the years, he kept the other party as honest as could be, by virtue of the fact that he was going to yell and scream and bombastically get up in Knesset and make, that's Vayitzaku, he was going to scream. They characterized him like the prophet Isaiah of old, who would come into the streets of Yerushalayim and burn the place down, but truth is going to be served. And finally he comes to the helm of leadership and shows that he is the loyal opposition, he is the terrorist, he has the, as the one who blew up the King David Hotel, who knew nothing but war, whose essence was an inside energy that was going to blow up the Arabs. He drives the Arabs, the PLO, beyond Damascus as prime minister, and then what happens? He completely fades from leadership that moment. Call it a nervous breakdown, call it a total dismemberment of his entire personality. Finish. Why? Because he made a decision. He made a decision. And he knew that that decision was in keeping with his entire philosophy. We're going to drive them back, we're going to stave them off, we're going to push the borders. Shtegedot la'yardein. There are two sides to the Jordan. Zu Shelanu, the western side, is ours now. Vizu Gamkein, and the eastern side, which is Jordan, which is Hussein, that's ours. That's Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. We have it. That's ours. That's the way he used to sing. And he makes a decision. Makes one decision. And what happens? He has to fade from the entire scene of political leadership. Leaders in any situation are afraid to decide when they know that any which way that they decide, you're going to have tsaras. Kamsa or Bar Kamsa. In other words, Joe Smith or Bar Kamsa. If we decide any which way, stand up to Joe Smith, you know what Joe Smith's going to do? He's going to take us, and he's going to burn us, and he's going to vilify us, and he'll pull us through the schmutz, and the only ones who will benefit by it are the Romans, who will have to keep the peace. Stand up for Baal Kamsa, for having come, for not having had the sense to stay away, even though the invitation came. And what will I get? Is it right? I think what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to tell you here is that the Kamsa or Bar Kamsa situation is one where you don't have criteria of right or wrong. The only thing you have working for you is that which is wrong and that which is worse.
It's a concept of containing the damage.
Rabbi, I think you heard your job. Okay, I'm not saying no. Let me tell you something, sir. You have another 499 blot to learn. I will guarantee that you get the finest of smicha, and you can be the first to sit here. I offered it to Sandy Sturman and to Joe Staroshevsky. Neither has taken up the situation in 15 years. Okay? And I say that with all the love and admiration that I have for them. You hear? So now I give you another 499, and that's it. It's a tough one.
But they have to look at the situation. I mean, again, we're looking at 2020 hindsight, so obviously going to be correct all the time. They knew what Bar Kamsa was planning. It was obvious what he was planning. Okay? And they could have a fairly good idea of the result. They knew the result of what Spenders going to be. The Romans were going to come down on them. One way or the other, the Romans were going to come down. They may not have foreseen the destruction of the base, but they knew the Romans were going to come down on them. The alternative of to make a special exception to allow Al-Mum to be sacrificed and to avoid this seems, in retrospect, to be significantly less dangerous a proposition let them go through.
That's what Rabbi Yochanan said. And the son of Solsha, Rav Zachariah ben Avkulas.
Right, but even Rav Zachariah.
This naivete.
But why? I mean, the Rebbeim clearly were thinking this to even consider the fact they would sacrifice the Sabbath. But to listen to Rav Zachariah.
They were so susceptible to just freezing into non-action. That's what it was. And it took just a simple question from Rav Zachariah ben Avkulas. And again, you are talking about a relatively minor personality in the continuum of Gemara and in the Mishnah. This is not a Rabbi Akiva, this is not a Rabbi Yehuda, this is not a Rabbi Meir. Did you ever hear the name of Zachariah ben Avkulas except for here? And I tell you, I checked my sources, he's mentioned in Shas only one more time. I don't want to demean him. He's still a Tano, listen to me.
Sure.
But he's a speck of dust in comparison to these bright luminaries who were standing there at that time in that door. And one little speck of dust in their eyes and they couldn't function. You were saying, Reb Chaim?
No, that's what I was... Why is Reb Yochanan trying from one side to describe Anavoto and the other side someone puts the blame on it?
Because
Anvanuto,
I hear what I'm saying. It's a sense of naivete. He had no option.
But what did he say to him there?
Okay.
That's the same thing by Shaul HaMelech, that is, when he didn't kill the Agagi, he was also Anvanuto.
Okay. Listen to me carefully. You've come to the essence of what I want to create for you in the next few moments. Anvisanuto, you have no options. Can you drop, leave it as a question, can you drop it and let's skip to a second famous Maisa of the Churban? Let's learn the business of how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets out of Yerushalayim. Do you remember the story? Let's see what the details are. And remembering what Chaim Malachi's statement here was, no options, you have no options. Go down, please. You'll find in the margin that I've numbered the lines, every five lines, as usual. And go down to line 37, towards the end of the line, 2, 4, 5 words from the end of the line. Havu Bahu Hanahu Biryone, if you want to see it in English, it's on the bottom of page 12, the end of the first column. Havahu behohu hanahu biryoni. At the time in Yerushalayim, you had a hefty population of biryonim. If you look in Rashi opposite line 22, biryonim, Rashi tells you, anashim reikimu pochazim la milchama. People, reikim, empty of values, pochazim means unstable. The only thing that they are ready for is what? Is war. They're out for fight, and these are, you know, I'm going to have to change your conception of zealotry. I've been called a zealot by a Reform colleague. I'm sorry to use that word in this town. A Reform colleague, he called me a zealot when I spoke against intermarriage. Yeah, well, I say I'm sorry. That's what the sorry is about. Others consider him colleagues. And I said to him, what is a zealot? You go out, you're there only for one reason. You're there to be a missionary. I said, you know something? That missionary zealotry is without question a derivative of a philosophy, of education, of an entire Weltanschauung. This is my entire approach to life. If that's what you call a zealot, then Boruch Shechiyonu V'kimonu L'Zman HaZeh, that you realize where truth rests and that you're not a zealot. Zealotry or a zealot is far more a dignified term than biryoni. The way Rashi gives it to you, he says, Anashim Reikim, they are empty of a philosophy. Pochazim, a Reikim of anything. Ish Reik means he doesn't have a brain in his head. Mob is good. Pochazim la milchama. They'll stand for anything, and they'll stand for nothing and fall for anything. Oh, this is a mob. You can't call them zealots. Call Rabbi Akiva a zealot. Call Bar Kokhba a zealot. These people, in their extremism, derived their energy from a thought out and patterned philosophy to which everything that they did was referred, not the Biryonim. Han Havu Baho, line 37, Havu Baho Hanhu Biryonim. This mob ruled over Yerushalayim. Omru Laho Rabbonon, and the rabbis tried to reason with them, saying to the mob, Nepuk, let's get out of this siege. Venaved Shloma Bahadayhu, and let's strike a peace treaty with the Romans. Lo Shavkihinu, the mob didn't allow that it be done. Omru Laho, the mob said to Rabbonon, Nepuk, let's get out. Venavid Krova Bahadayhu, let's beat the pants off them, let's go to war, and we'll take them. It'll cost us, but we'll take them. Omrahola Rabbonon, so the rabbi said to them, Lo Mistaya Milso, you're not going to be able to win this one because you are so terribly outnumbered. And the estimations of how many Roman soldiers existed in Yerushalayim at the time of the Churban is staggering. We have some Roman historians who set the number at somewheres over 500,000, 600,000, 580,000 just in the first wave, the first encounter. That's a staggering number of army. You're not going to win, they said. Okay, you have these two sides. You have the rabbis who want to make peace. They are the ones who want to appease. And you have the Biryonim, you have the mob who are out to defend their honor at all costs. What do you do? The end of 39. Komu, the mob gets up. Kalnuhu lahanuhu ambare dechite vesa'are. Kalnuhu, they burn down every ambare, every storehouse in Yerushalayim of wheat and of barley. V'hoyo kafna, v'hava kafna, and there was instant famine. To the extent that Marza bas Baisus, asirosa diushalayim havya. Take for example what was going on as a result of that destruction of the sources of food, where a gal by the name of Martha, the daughter of Baisus, who was one of the wealthiest women of Yerushalayim, obviously she lived in the old city, she must have lived right near the Kotel. You know what an apartment cost in those days near the Kotel? It must have cost $1 million cash. All right. What? The same, worse than today. $1 million today is not $1 million in what it was then. She must have lived right by the Kotel. What did she do? Shidarto lishiluchei. She sent her butler, her maid, ve'omrole, and said to him, Zil, please go ayasile smida, bring me the finest of flour, because we're soon going to run out. The supplies have been burned down. Ade Ozal, by the time he went to the shuk, which was a couple of feet from the house of where she lived, Izdaban, there wasn't a single place in the shuk where you could find someone to sell you the finest Pillsbury flour. Asa, he comes, Amarla, and he says to her, Malta, smida leka, I'm sorry, the best flour there isn't. Chivata ika, I have no frills white flour from Pathmark I can get you. I can't get you the best Pillsbury. Omrale, she says, okay, Zil Aiseli, go buy me some flour. At least we should have some food in the house. No. Ad Ozal Izdaban. By the time he goes ahead and arrives at the shuk, Izdaban, nothing was left. Also, he comes back, Va'omala, listen, Chivarta, no frills, pathmark flowers, Leko, there aren't. Gushkero Iko, maybe I can get you brown flour. Unprocessed flour, which is a lower grade. Omalei, so she says to him, Zil Aiseli, go get me something, I don't care what. Ada Azal Izdaban, by the time he arrives, the mobs grabbing for the food, Izdaban, and I'll have something to say about that in a moment, everything was sold. Also, for a fourth time, he comes back to her, Omalo, Gushker Oleka, I don't even have brown flour, unprocessed flour. Will you take Kimcho de Seori Ika? Will you take the flour made out of barley, which is the lowest grade possible, the cheapest and the lowest grade? Omrale, she said to him, look, Zilai Seli, go get me something. Ada Azal Izdaban. By the time he arrived, Izdaban, everything was sold. Let me just tell you a personal experience that I and my children had when we lived in Yerushalayim 9 years ago. And the experience was a simple one. You know, it doesn't snow in Yerushalayim. At least it's not supposed to snow in Yerushalayim. When the weather report indicates that there may be snow in the morning, at 5 o'clock in the morning, you see mobs like you have never seen in your life line up outside of the makolet, outside of the mama papa grocery stores, buying anything and everything that is necessary for a disaster. You buy every egg that you can possibly contain. You buy as much milk as you think you can drink. Bread on asof, piles, flour, oil, salt, you buy. You don't stop to think, all right, so it's going to snow in Yerushalayim. Do you know how long it's going to stay on the ground? A day is a disaster. 3 hours, it'll melt. It'll melt. I, Bedidi Habahuvda, I lived at 111, Rehov Bayit Vegan. Next door, 113 Bayit Vegan. Downstairs was Mrs. Cohn's Makola. I saw that we went running. We went out of curiosity. When we found out what you were supposed to do, so all of us went to shop. The whole six of us went down to buy. What we were buying, we don't know. The disaster of the fright of Nebuch not having food under such idiotic, stupid, modern circumstances, multiplied by a power of a 10 to the 10th time, is what probably what went on over here. And your comment that this guy wasn't too bright, indeed you are right, except for one thing. You don't know what Marsa Basbaisus is. She's going to take any old flower. She's going to buy no frills. I'll show you who she is. And we'll have to stop after that also. Let us continue to see what this Marsa does. Line 45. You'll have difficulty with the next couple of lines, so don't hold me to the details, just try to get to the idea. Hava Shalifa Misana. She was without shoes, obviously relaxing in the comfort of her home because she had maids and servants to do her work. When he comes back for the fourth time, Omra, she says to herself, Epuk, let me myself go, va'achazei, and I will see imashkechano midi lemechal, if I can find something to eat, because this guy is not going to get us anything. Running barefoot, and that means in despair and in panic. Esav lo pulsa bekar'o. Her foot was dirtied with the dung of some animal, with the droppings of some animal, which if you've been in certain streets of Yerushalayim, especially where the shuk is, especially where the Arab population is, you know that it could happen any time. You're walking Yerushalayim, and a donkey passed just before, it was a dumb Arab, all of a sudden you smell that you stepped in something. Barefooted, this princess, and I call this Jewish princess, is running through the streets of Yerushalayim, and her feet become smelly, dirty with something that she steps in. What happens? Mesa, third word on line 46. Ultimately, she died. Kariyala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thought of her and what had happened to her, the scene. He said in her eulogy, now I understand the posuk in the Tochacha, harakoboch v'ha'anugo, those of you who are gentle and you are so pampered and tender, will Nebuch, you will expire from the conditions of what the Onesh is going to be. Asher lo nisisok kaf ragleho, she never lifted her foot to get it dirty or to work. You will not be able to contend with what's going on. What Marsa Bas Baisus was truly a Jewish princess, a Jap, minus the A. Maybe a Jip, a Jewish Israeli princess, who when conditions were bad and she had to bloody her hand and get dirty with the unfortunate situations of existence over there, could not hack it, and she did not survive. And there are those of us who are able to survive and those who aren't fit to survive. She was one of those who pampered herself and could not be fit to survive. She never was a Girl Scout, and she never knew the motto, be prepared, and she never understood what was going on. And when the dangers came upon her, she just completely expired. The filth, the dirt, the inconceivable conditions in Yerushalayim, the hunger, she wasn't able to live up to it. And ultimately, Mesa. Kri Allah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, now I understand what the Tochacha says. You tender and gentle souls, so pampered, Asherlo misiso kaf raglo, who couldn't even with the foot of with the ball of her feet stand up and rise to the occasion. Ikod Amrei, there are some who say that she died another way. Her death came as a result of the grogros derav tzodok ochlo. She ate the sucked out figs that Rabbi Tzodok ate, sucked out, v'isnisa, and as a result she became sick, umesa, and she died. Now you're asking me where these figs and what this Rabbi Tzodok is all about. So Rabbi Tzodok Yosef Arboin Shnin Betanisa. Rabbi Tzodok knew that the destruction was coming, and for 40 years he fasted as a tshuva method to be able to try to tip the scales in favor of Bnei Yisrael. And he did that, the lo lecharev Yerushalayim, so that Yerushalayim would not be destroyed. Ki hava ochel midei, he was so thin and gaunt that when he would eat anything, hava mischazei me'avroi, you would see his Adam's apple as the food went down. Vechi hava bori, and when he needed a little strength, Mayasele grogros, they would bring to him figs that are a bit dried out in mayitz, and he would suck out the sweetness from it. Mayitz mayohu, he would suck out whatever sweetness there is, the mayim, in these figs. Shedeleho, and ultimately he would go ahead and survive, but he died. Ki havon konoch nafsho, when Martha was about ready to die, according to this second version, afikito lechol dahava v'kaspa, she took out all of her gold and her silver, shedisei b'shuka, and she threw it out into the streets of the marketplace, v'omra, hi, this gold and silver, lamai mi boili, what do I need it for? Can't get me any food, I can't eat it. Hainu dichasiv, and this is what is written, kaspom bechutzos yashlichu. This is what Yechezkel said, that the famine will be so incredibly disastrous that they'll throw their money into the streets because money would be totally valueless. Now, this is all as a result of Hanhu Biryoni, this mob. Let's continue and look at the mob and come back to what I ask you to do. You have no choice. Vexation, you just don't know how to turn. Abba Sikra, that's the name of a person. He was Reish Biryoni de Yerushalayim. He was the commander-in-chief of Yerushalayim. What is that, the chevra that works in Newark there? What do they call? Lisa Sliwa, the guardian angels. He was the chief of the guardian angels. He was the Lisa Sliwa of the guardian angels. Okay? You will listen to that word guardian angels in a little while. you'll see how the Gemara translates guardian angels. Mamish. I mean, if ever we get up a bunch of yeshiva guys into the guardian angels, there's a name for it in the Gemara. Abba Sikra, no, not JDL. Abba Sikra Resh Bilyonid Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra was the head of the guardian angels. Bar Achte the Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. He was the nephew of none other than Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Huh? What do you want to do? It's cold? If you want to turn it off, turn it off. So, turn it off by. Johnson, lower it. Just lower the thermostat, that's all. I mean, raise the thermostat. What is it? We are at the end of line 51, Abba Sikra. Abba Sikra Reish Biryona de Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra, who was the head of the Biryonim in Yerushalayim, was Bar Achtei, was the nephew to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Habo Shelach Le, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai sent him a message. The message had three words. To Bitzina Ole Gaboi. Come secretly to me. Also, the nephew came to his great uncle. Omale, and the uncle says, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai says, Ad emas avidetu hochi. How much longer are you going to continue this way? Omale, so Abba Sikra, the head of the Biryonim, says to his uncle, my i'avid, what can I do? De'i'amina laho midei, if I'll mention one thing of conciliation to them, you know what they're going to do to me? They'll have two words for me. Katluli. They'll kill me on the spot. Now here is the head of the Biryonim who was able to do what? Who was able to marshal these forces and harness them into a corporate entity, into a body, into a political party. Here the leader, in whom they place their trust, tells his uncle in all honesty, if I tell my troops to call it off now, you know what they're going to do to me? They're going to kill me. The vexation, the confusion of leadership. I have my life.